Hey, ¿qué pasa, Calexico? Welcome back to the podcast. First of all, I want to thank my friends here at Calexico Brewing for allowing me to record today's episode here. Also, I want to thank all my sponsors. I didn't bring the list, but I'm going to insert all the sponsors somewhere along the show in post. But yeah, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank, like I said, Calexico Brewing Company. And welcome to episode 168, I believe. My guest today is Cristian Salgado. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Before we talk about what you're here to promote, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So as you already mentioned, my name is Cristian Salgado, and I graduated from Calexico High School. Shortly after I graduated from Calexico High School, I went off to San Diego State, and there I studied, I double majored in psychology and environmental studies with a minor in counseling and social change. I like to joke that I wanted to just take all the classes. I didn't want to finish my undergrad. So that's kind of a nutshell of my undergrad education. And then I ended up moving up north to Humboldt County, where I attended Humboldt State University. And there I got my master's degree in an interdisciplinary program called Environment and the Community. So it's like a social science and a physical science degree. It's kind of interdisciplinary, like I said. So my background is like heavily in the environmental studies. I outside of this position, so the position I'm here to talk about today is the Imperial County's University of California's Master Gardener Program. So I'm the first coordinator. This is a new program. I have worked for the University of California for 3.5 years, but I held a different position. I was focused more on climate smart agriculture, but I'm really excited that this position opened up and I was able to jump into this role as a UC Master Gardener, mostly because I'm an avid gardener. I am part of the gardening community in Imperial County. And I'm just really excited to be able to share about what I've been working on. Like I said, this is a new program. So I've been in this position for almost 5 months. At the end of August, it'll be 5 months. So it's new, so I hope I can answer all your questions. But by no means am I an expert at gardening and horticulture, but I can find the answer for you.
Yeah, yeah. do you think that was gardening something that was always something that you were interested in, or was it? Because I know a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, gardening was a thing because, I feel it's something that relaxing. You're playing with soil and seeing things grow. But was it something that you grew up, you know, wanting to do or liking to do?
Yeah. So my answer to that question would be, personally, growing up in Imperial County as agriculture is such a huge industry. Most of our family works in agriculture. I actually had no interest whatsoever in agriculture or gardening. It really wasn't until I moved to San Diego State, I started my second major in environmental studies, that I become acquainted with a community garden. I actually never knew what a community garden was. I actually thought it was quite weird that people were wanting to do physical labor and grow food, because my concept of growing food is commercial agriculture. It's hard work. It's serious work. It's backbreaking work. So I was seeing all these like young, I call them like hippity dippity folks that with their dreadlocks and their like, you know, eco deodorant, and they're out there in these community gardens, and it just like blew my mind. And then slowly I kind of started taking steps back. And then I was like talking to like my nana, my tata, and they're like, yeah, we've always had our jardin. Like we've always had chilies. We've always had tomatoes. And then I talked to my suegros, and they're also like, yeah, like it's pretty common for all of us here to have something. I just never really paid attention to it. So that would be kind of like when I was introduced to it. So then I started working at community gardens. I started to work with an organization called Green Love that did a community garden at SDSU main campus. That's like flourished since I left. Moved up north, worked on a couple of more community gardens as a volunteer, gained knowledge of small agriculture. So like I said, I'm very familiar with what commercial agriculture looks like. Yes. Huge fields, 120 acres of alfalfa or of one single crop. I was going and interviewing farmers that only had like a small peach orchard and a small vegetable, you know, plot, and they were growing food for farmers markets. So I had no idea what a farmer's market was until I moved to San Diego and then moved up. I was like, wow, there's farmers that want to take their produce to these areas. So it was mind blowing. So I kind of like had to leave a little bit, I think, the area to see that and then come back and just be like, wow, like we have so much that we can offer, I think, here being an agricultural industry economy here in Imperial County. So that's kind of was my journey into gardening. But since then, I garden every season. I garden here in the valley. I've grown, I think right now I just finished up growing cucumbers, which was really fun. But I've also grown squash, pumpkins, different types of flowers.
You mentioned the gardening community here in Imperial Valley. I know I'm a part of the Facebook group of. Do you think that more people should join, or is because like for me and my house, like we try growing stuff, but
yeah.
But we always.
Success is mixed. Yeah.
I don't think it's mixed.
It's more failing.
Yeah. So do you think our local Facebook group, is it a good knowledge group where you can ask or get help for your garden?
I recently, once I got into this position, joined the Facebook group, the Imperial Valley Gardening Community. I think that's like the official group name. And I was just blown away of not only how many followers, but how many people are like doing their own networking and connecting. Like, I have this produce. Does anyone want it? I'm looking for someone who's done this. Can I have some more information? And that kind of goes back to your comment about the pandemic. I believe it was another University of California employee, Paul, what's his last name? I can't remember, but his name's Paul and Chris Wong. They have a CalFresh program. They started that page and kind of it took a life of its own. And I was able to do a gardening webinar series through the Climate Smart position I used to have. And there were so many people that registered. I think every webinar was attended by at least 100 people. Oh, wow. So to think like Imperial County, people like signing in on Zoom, sitting down for an hour, like there was such a huge interest. And I think that really is what pushed the University of California to think about, why don't we have a Master Gardener program? And then I'll talk a little bit right now about what is the Master Gardener program. But I do think there's an amazing network of like home gardeners in Imperial County of like all ages and all experiences. But I'm sorry to hear that you're not too successful. So that's what I'm hoping with the Master Gardener programs, because we really, our main focus too is extend research-based information. So all our information comes through the University of California. So we have, for example, a growing calendar. So I tell you, like, when is the right time? What season should you grow a specific crop? So an example of that would be, like, in the summer, you probably don't want to do any of your lettuce or cilantro because it's not going to grow in the heat and it's not going to be really successful. But come the winter, yeah, grow all your leafy greens. In the summer, you want to stick with maybe like okra, sometimes cucumbers, melons, things that are really tolerant to the heat. So the Master Gardener program is really, I like to say, like, there's so much information out in the world. Like, there's Instagram and there's Facebook, there's TikTok, there's, you know, YouTube. You can hear everyone's comment on what to do.
Yeah.
Well, we really try to focus on just what's been research-based. So I can tell you what my secrets are about the garden, but really this program focuses on what has, you know, the research in academia have shown in water conservation and horticulture, which is gardening. Another word for gardening.
Oh, horticulture is like a fancier word.
Yeah, because agriculture is more of like commercial. It's more meant for the garden. I like to do the comparison of like, the garden is more for, at least from my perspective, more for leisure. Like you said, there's like the social like aspect of it that's beneficial, the well-being aspect, the physical, being out in the garden, the soil. You're not on a time frame. Like, you can plant your radish, and if your radish takes like 3 months to grow, which is a really long time for a radish, like a radish should grow like in a month, no one's going to get upset at you. But if people at the grocery store need radishes, you know, they need them, you know, you better have those, that radish growing on a clock, you know, and harvest at a certain time. So they're kind of a little bit two different worlds in like how they talk about growing food.
I'm questioning because my reason that what I really wanted to grow during the pandemic was chiles guaritos. I think they also call them Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what American name in Santa Fe. Because I didn't really go out to the grocery store. I would do everything online, you know, through the Walmart app. But I couldn't find those chiles on the app. So, like, I was like, what are they called? And I'm going to grow once I get some, I'm going to grow them. What's the best time to grow chiles?
Chiles. So, in my experience, if it's under a tree, like, somewhere we can get some shade. So, like, sun during the morning time and then shade during the hottest point of the day, a chili plant can pretty much live. I feel like a perennial. Like, you can keep a chili plant alive for a pretty long time. I grew poblanos. And I think I had them for like 2 years straight. Like, they just kept on giving. I kept on fertilizing. I had them in full sun with like a little shade over them. But the good time to plant chilies would be like the springtime. So not too much like towards the summer, but maybe sometime like around April, March. Like, you're kind of getting out of the winter, but we haven't hit like that 100+ degree weather yet, and let them establish themselves. And yeah, you can keep them going. Yeah, but I'm sorry that you didn't. Did you just grab the seeds like out of one from the store and you tried to plant them?
No. Well, yeah, seeds? No, I got one from
the store.
Yeah, and then I put it like in a wet napkin so that it would
to like germinate.
But I think it did germinate, and then when I put it like in a pot or something, like in a little pot, whatever, it never grew.
It never grew.
So I don't know what I did wrong.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when you use seeds that come from a grocery store, a vegetable, it's like, I kind of like, I guess the phrase is like hit and miss. Like, you can like sometimes like be successful, because I've met people that say like, I just threw the tomato outside and then I got a tomato plant and the tomatoes are delicious. But sometimes the varieties or the type of seeds that we eat our produce from are meant for commercial agriculture. So sometimes they don't grow for the person that's harvested and uses it. Yeah, it's kind of like I actually don't recommend people really to use seeds that they take from their store-bought, just because you really don't know, like, if, for example, like a chili could be a hybrid, which means it's been intentionally created between like two specific parent plants in order to get that trait that you want.
Yeah.
So if you take that seed of the offspring and plant it, it might be like the same, or it might just be something completely different. You just don't know. It doesn't stay true to its original. Like, people actually will like physically germinate like two types of plants in order to cross-pollinate and get that specific hybrid.
Yeah.
It's very labor intense agriculture.
Yeah. And it's crazy how it's kind of like humans, like genetic, like you get like a gene from this plant and put it on this plant and you get.
Yeah.
And like dogs, when you know how they breed them, they mix them to get specific traits.
Then there's also really cool plants like chayote. We most of the time people will cut it up and like there's the big seed in the middle. Sometimes like people are like, oh, I'll plant that seed. Well, actually, like the chayote, the whole body, the whole squash that we're used to eating, it needs that whole thing. Like, that whole thing's the seed. So when you plant it, you want to plant it in its entirety, or you want to germinate it. And people don't know that. It's not just the seed in the middle. It's like that. So it's one of those unique ones. The sad thing about chayote, though, is I've been trying to grow it here, but our elevation won't allow. Usually it grows in areas that have higher elevation, and we're below sea level, which is like not good for certain crops. Some crops just won't thrive in like our region. So the Master Gardener program really, we'll be educating residents on, you know, like not only the season, that's right, the best time to plant a variety of seeds, but also elevation, water, proper how to fertilize your plant. It's like a lot of like little things that I feel like people are eager for the information, like that Facebook group. But sometimes they're just kind of like searching for answers. So hopefully we'll have advisors from UC A&R, which are all specialists in their field. So some of them are like irrigation specialists, will come and do a talk here and it'll be open to the public. For the most part, all our events will be free, and people get access to that like academic research information that I think there's like a gap. But people want to hear speakers, people who are experts at growing, let's say, watermelon. Like, what do they have to tell us? Or, you know, making compost, stuff like that.
So, yeah, going back to that, to the master's program.
Of course. Let's...
Tell us a little bit about, you know, how many people are you going to, are you planning on on training, and what's the end goal of them after they become the master gardener?
Yeah. So first I want to kind of preface with the UC Master Gardener program, has been around since, the '80s. So the Master Gardener program exists, all throughout California. And it's part of the University of California Cooperative Extensions. So what that is kind of a little bit of like, it's kind of, I think those Russian dolls that you open up, like that's how my job is described. So it's the University of California Agricultural Natural Resources, and they're like the big umbrella in California, and they have RECs, which are research extension centers, and cooperatives, which are University of California Cooperative Extension. So we have two, actually. We have a DREC, which is a Desert Research Center, and it's off of Holton Road heading to Hopeville. A lot of people are familiar with it because they have the Farm Smart program, where elementary school and high school students go out and they do U-pick fields. There's a lot of field trips that go out there to learn about the seasonality of vegetables grown in agriculture. And then the cooperative extensions usually house advisors that are doing agricultural research. So there's cooperative extensions all throughout California. We are just one of all the cooperative extensions, and we just recently adopted the Master Gardener program. And really the core of the Master Gardener program is extending, like I mentioned, research-based information about home horticulture, pest management. And it's kind of interesting to me as a resident of the area that we're kind of so late to the party with the Master Gardener program. We are we're the 53rd county to adopt it. The first two counties back in the 80s was Riverside and Sacramento. So they've had this program for like over 20, what is it?
If it's in the 80s, it's almost 40 years then.
Yeah, like 40 years. So they've been around for a really long time, where, you know, we're the 53rd county to adopt it. So I've always been kind of curious, like, I feel like we're such a huge ag community. Like, why didn't we have a master grant program? No. But we have it now. It was funded through the Imperial County Ag Benefits Fund. A little bit about that, I'm not too knowledgeable about it, but it's just the Ag Benefits Fund. It's managed by the Imperial County Board of Supervisors. And basically, it's a pot of money that comes in due to loss of agriculture production and jobs due to the renewable energy that was developed. So they decided, you know, we're going to try this out. We're going to fund the Master Gardener program, and they fund it for 2 years. So we're on year one. First step was find a coordinator, which was me. Step two is me planning the whole program. So it's like a small baby step. So the game plan, kind of going to your question, is I will be training alongside with advisors for UCNR 50 residents on the basics of home horticulture. And it's a 15-week training. There is a fee involved. It's going to cost $130. But part of that is actually the cost is just meant to help support all the supplies and tools. Everyone that signs up gets a Master Gardener handbook. So it's this like really thick book. I should have brought it. I didn't know we were going to have it, but a really thick book with all the chapters. So it's every week they'll be coming on Saturday for 4 hours. And we'll do a little bit of lecture, and then we'll do a little bit of lab. So it's kind of like being a student. I mean, I hope the community that comes is really ready to put on their thinking hats and get excited about gardening at this really education level. So they're really committing when they register to be part of this 15-week training. And then after the 15 weeks, they're considered official master gardeners. Through our program as volunteers. And to stay part of the volunteer program is to have them do 50 hours of volunteer work every year, and 12 hours of continued education. And as the coordinator, I set those up. So like those advisors that would come in and talk about, let's say, climate change, my volunteers would attend those and be able to count them as continued education. Okay. So really becoming a master gardener volunteer, it's a commitment. We're trying to create a network and of people who are enthusiastic by gardening, and I want to support their projects. So an example of that would be a teacher who, say, has a small garden at their school, but is not sure about the details of gardening. Maybe they're doing it for science purposes or other reasons. And it's like, you know, I want to take this 15-week training. You know, it's possible for them to get their volunteer hours, could be extending education to those students, or maybe teaching other teachers about gardening. So really, we're really focused on the education. I joke with people, like, we're not a landscaping. Like, don't call me for my 50 volunteers to go cut your trees, or if they're going to mow your lawn, or we don't do that work. But they can show you what are the proper techniques for pruning your trees and when to prune them. Like, I see people right now pruning their trees in the middle of the summer, and that's, like, really bad for their trees. Like, it's hard for them to recuperate when it's super hot. Usually you want to do that when the weather is cooler. But you constantly see people like trimming trees.
Yeah.
That's just a side note. So they'll go through a 15-week training. So my goal is we'll start in January, and then April the 22nd, actually Earth Day, we're going to do a graduation for our, hopefully we have 50 people that start and end. And then after that, it's really I'm open to my volunteers guiding our project. As a coordinator right now, I am, you know, kind of like navigating the ship. But with the volunteers, I mean, they're really going to say, like, maybe we want to focus on composting. Maybe we want to focus on children gardens or working with other youth. Maybe we want to focus on, I don't know, like succulents or indoor plants. And then my job is to support them in what they want to do. And hopefully we get more. So every year we'll be training I'm starting off with 50, very ambitious, but we might go down to 30. It might vary from year to year, but I'm really excited. So September, the first week of September is when applications will open, and it's going to run all the way till mid-November. Okay. It's an online application. I'll post it on our Instagram and other social media like Facebook, but it's on our website, the application. It's an online application. And once you submit your application, I'm going to review them. I'm going to pick out, I don't know how many I'll get. I hope I get hundreds, but I'll be interviewing a handful of them, then selecting 50. And once you've been selected, then you have the option of going and getting your fingerprints. So all our volunteers are fingerprinted, and they also fall under our liability insurance. So they're really, which is really great, because so many people are like, well, I need volunteers to help with a garden and do stuff, but my nonprofit can't, you know, pay for liability insurance for your volunteers. Once you're a certified master gardener, you get fingerprinted, and so you can work with children, you can work with schools, you can go to, say, a juvenile hall facility. Our program is within the university. We have standards of conduct. So we're trying to create not just a garden enthusiast, but garden enthusiasts that want to, like, take up the, you know, the passion and heading to a...
Hey guys, sorry for the interruption, but I want to take this time and thank my sponsors. I want to thank my friends Camilo, Jake, Eric Ortega. I want to thank Eddie Lopez from Roots Creative, Ms. Norma Sierra Galindo, IID Director representing Division 5 and serving the entire Imperial Valley, Will Torres from Valley Sports Network, your Imperial Valley source for sports. I want to thank Sergio's Tacos and Hot Dogs. With 8 years of experience serving the Imperial, San Diego, and Yuma counties with Mexicali-style hot dogs and taquizas, contact Sergio at 760-562-0057 or look for Sergio's Tacos and Hot Dogs on Facebook. I want to thank Eric Reyes from Los Amigos de la Comunidad, empowering communities together. Finally, I want to thank David Gastelum. If you're thinking of buying or selling a home in the Imperial or San Diego counties, make sure you contact David. He's not only a realtor, but an investor with over 20 years of experience, and he'll teach you along the way in one of the most important investments of your life. Contact David at 760-235-9576 or look for David Gastelum on Facebook. All right, guys, well, now back to the show.
Oh, you're good.
So, is there like an age limit? Can high school students apply, or what's the requirements?
That's a good question. And I almost looked over that very important thing. You have to be 18 years and older. In my experience, in the past few months, I went in, when I first got this position, I talked to almost like any coordinator in California from all 52 programs that wanted to talk to me and asked them, you know, who makes up your population for your program? What days do you do your trainings? How long are your trainings? What do you charge for your trainings? And a lot of them were just telling me, typically the Master Gardener population is made up of older, the senior population, retired individuals that are looking for, they're maybe really passionate about gardening or want to connect with the community. They want to maybe spearhead their own project. So I'm kind of flipping that on its head a little, and I'm hoping to get like a variety of ages. So I'm going to be doing some talks, hopefully at the colleges, you know, going and doing some tabling at the colleges and doing outreach there, maybe doing an informational meeting, hopefully to get some college age students. And then also I'll be going to the senior living centers and doing some informational meetings at the libraries. I'll be doing informational meetings. So I'm really going to like go everywhere and try to get the word out about the Master Gardener program and hoping I just get like a mix of age groups.
Yeah. Cause the reason I ask is because I work at Calexico High School, and I know Chris goes down there and he works with the
kids at the Garden Club.
Yeah. So, and I see a lot of kids that are really, you know, passionate about, about their garden. So, you know, that was one of the reasons I was thinking maybe one of the high school students can become a master gardener and come back and do his hours training his classmates, working on the garden. And when Chris can't make it, he can be the lead there and stuff.
We've really thought about that. I think some of my thought process on that is hopefully we have an adult that is like, you know, really comfortable, maybe has a background in education, a passion for gardening, who could really possibly be that, or maybe even a teacher already at Calexico High School who could be like, yeah, I want to do this extra thing, and then I can really support the Eco Garden Club. And then that individual, we have access to curriculum, like it's called the Junior Master Gardener Program. So our Master Gardener Program is really focused on adults 18 and older, but there's possibility that there's one 18 and older person, maybe a recent graduate from Calexico High School, because I think the Eco Garden has been there for some time now. I'm sure there's already college people who've graduated from college. Maybe they move back, and we can do that. We can be like, okay, well, let's see if we can give you some information training about junior master gardeners. Let's train like our first cohort of junior master gardeners. And then that'd be like a program in itself within the master.
Yeah. And I'll mention it. I know we have a Miss Croke, one of our teachers. She also has a garden in front of her classroom. So I'm going to mention to her, maybe she
would be interested.
Yeah. Because, they have the garden that Chris grows, and then there's another one with...
It's like along the... It's between the trailers and then the cement building.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Science one, yeah.
I've been able to... I went... Because she is the ag... I don't know. Uh-huh. The ag teacher. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think I've met her before.
Okay. I'll mention it to her because maybe she would be interested.
I know there's some other ag teachers. The ag teacher in Brawley who was really interested about composting... something that I really kind of went around when I first got this position and talked to anyone who wanted to talk about gardening, because I really wanted to get a sense of what is the information the community wants to learn first. And the two things that kind of came to the surface were compost. I want to know how to actually do compost. Like, I've tried in the past, I've made mistakes, it doesn't work. So we will be doing, it's kind of like a two-part, because I kind of like overreached, I think, a little bit. But so the first thing is going to be a webinar about all the different types of ways to compost. It's meant for anyone who wants to log in. It's going to be free. I don't have a date for it yet. But they'll give you get your brain thinking if you're new to composting, or maybe you're have done it before, but you just want a refresher. And there I'm really going to open it up another four-part series training that I'm going to have in the fall. And actually that's going to start the last week of October and run all the way till the end of November, or before Thanksgiving. So a couple of weeks before the 19th or so. And it's a four-week training. And that one's going to be like in-depth, hands-on, hot composting. So you're going to come like day one and you're going to learn about like what to put in your compost, and you're going to go out and you're going to have to find them, fill up buckets for me of like, if it's food waste, if it's wood chips, and then we're going to build compost piles. And then you're going to come back and we're going to learn about the ecosystem in the compost piles. I hope no one that doesn't like insects are going to want to join, because you see a lot of insects and fungus and other things that are growing in mites and in the compost pile. And then the goal is at the end of the training, they're going to learn how to use compost, so how to sift it. So my goal is to really have those 20 people, and the fee for that would be $40. So we're only opening it to 20 because it's so in depth. Mm-hmm. At the end, I hope those people can go off and be like, oh, if I need someone to be like, hey, you know, there's a school that's really interested in composting. Maybe I can make it all the way to Calipat, or you live in Calipat. You took this 4-week training with me. You started doing the composting, you know, maybe become a master garden training person, and you can go off and like help manage this little compost tub or something.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the two part. I'm really excited about that. Right now I've been cooking 2 batches of compost. It's kind of funny that we're here at a brewery. I actually collected 400 pounds of spent grains from Meshka Brewery, which is the brewery in El Centro. And, I love beer. Don't like spent grain. It's heavy when it's wet, and it can be a lot to kind of work with, but it makes great compost. It's considered nitrogen rich. Even though it looks brown, it's considered a green. To explain that, when you're making compost, you have to, everything has carbon and nitrogen, like the basis of life. Mm-hmm. But you want to mix like a ratio of 1 to 30 of like carbon to nitrogen. So you need things that are nitrogen rich, like grass would be nitrogen rich. Carbon could be like wood chips or cardboard. Got to mix that up perfectly in these perfect small pieces. Build a 1 cubic yard pile, 3 feet tall, 3 feet wide. Sometimes I go 4 feet wide, 3 feet tall, just because I'm so short. I don't want to be doing like a 4 feet, like pulling stuff. And it just starts heating up. And then all those microorganisms are like working and doing their job and breaking everything down.
So that's your base, and then you can just start throwing stuff under, or how does it work?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. We can just do a whole podcast on composting, and I can talk about that for years. But the way I'm doing compost, and the way I teach hot composting, and the way the university teaches hot composting, is it's kind of like baking a cake. Once you got your ingredients in your cake and you put it in the oven, do you want to go and add some raw flour or egg? It's not going to cook evenly. So when we cook compost piles, we do all of our ingredients. We put it in. It starts cooking. We go every week and we flip the pile. And that's to aerate it. We add water to it to keep it moisture. We need 65% moisture content. And then you let it cook. I don't encourage people to keep adding, because what happens is that you might, it's not going to cook evenly. So you're never really going to get to that point. If you add every week, you're going to have raw material when you go and you try to sift out the compost.
Yeah.
So we take it all the way to it goes through like 2 phases of cooking. And then once it cools down, which means the soil won't reach higher than like 70 degrees anymore. So a compost pile will get, like right now, today I went and I tested the compost pile. I go every day, even on Saturday and Sunday. And 160, you don't want it to get hotter than 160. But typically the pile will be anywhere between 120 and 150 is like a really good like space for your compost. So it's hot. You don't want to go dig your hand in there. You're actually cooking. So I wouldn't add things. Vermicomposting, which is composting with worms, is a completely different process, and you want to throw food in there every week.
Okay.
I like that system better for the people who are just like, you know, I just want to, you know, cook something.
I think that's the one, I guess like the most common one you see like on, you know, when gardening shows where they just throw stuff in there and it's worms that are, you know, creating the compost, right?
Yeah. And that's actually my favorite. I've vermicomposted in apartments, in like small living spaces. When I was an undergrad, I like dragged my compost bin like all the way from like San Diego here over the summer. I've killed worms here in the heat. Like, it's so hot. They like temperature, like San Diego's perfect for them. They don't want to be anywhere where it's like 75, 80 degrees or higher. So like these 115 weather, like the worms themselves, they overheat. They don't eat enough of the waste. They're kind of slowing down. They're in stress. It's like when we're stressed, do you want to go and eat a hamburger in the middle of the summer? Hey,
sometimes you do.
Maybe you're hungry. You got to do what you got to do. But the worms are not going to do that.
I mean, if you stress eat.
Well, my worms are not going to stress eat. But yeah, I totally get what you mean. But yeah, so composting is super fun. So that was something that came to the surface. People were asking me a lot of composting questions. So I was like, cool, we're going to do something on that early on. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was a lot of teachers and individuals that work for schools were saying that they have a garden or they want to have a community garden or a school setting garden, and they just don't know when to plant what, or they've done something with students and they're like, oh, they didn't grow. Like, that's kind of not too successful. You know, if you tell kids, like, you plant the seed, we're going to get a plant, and then no plant happens. Yeah. So we're going to do a training only focused on educators that are working in school settings and kind of give them a what are the best practices for doing school gardens? And really, I'm going to go about it in a way that's like, small is better. As much as I would love to do huge things sometimes, a few pots or, you know, only doing herbs. It really depends. Educators are busy. They're required to do so much. Now imagine you have to go and like till and like do physical, like if there's a passionate teacher out there that wants to do that, that's awesome. Or if you have students that can do it, but sometimes, you know, the school year kind of picks up, things happen, the pandemic happened. I know with the eco garden, I mean, during the pandemic, we actually went out, myself, Chris, and their volunteers. When the school closed, we went out and we actually like physically pulled out a bunch of plants and put them in pots and gave them away to students because we were like, they're never going to come back here. We don't want these to die. Mm. So we just put everything in pots as best as we could, and students took them home to continue growing them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because they just completed the school shut down the garden was still there. Students still felt connected to it. So that was like a little thing where we were just like, well, put everything in pots and just let them take it home. We had parents come with their student, with the children, and just like take it all, take the chilies, take the peppers, it's all free.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's I forgot to mention that the chef and at our school,
Chef Nunez,
he uses, you know, some of the crops that the kids grow in our garden. I think they have a like an herb garden that he uses a lot. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think it's pretty cool that, you know, they use some of the ingredients that they're growing for the class at Mr. Nunez.
As a person who's like Calexico is near dear to my heart and Calexico High School, I think so many cool things can come out of Calexico. I know like even their food service director is like really interested in like baby even like purchasing produce from the students if they would grow a little bit more. He always jokes, like he says, like, oh, it's because Chef Nunez takes all of the good produce, there's nothing left for me. But then that's a different system. Like right now they're gardening mostly for, you know, the experience of gardening. This past year when I supported the most I could when I joined this position, the Eco Garden Club with Chris, I did a seed saving workshop, and the students were like, they hadn't had the opportunity yet to see the whole plant cycle. So like, for example, like they knew what cilantro looked like, but they didn't know what it looked like when it was coleander, which is like we use sometimes as a it's like little tiny brown balls. And we use it sometimes as spice. And we grind it up as a spice. And they're like, oh my God, that's the same thing. They were like, we thought these plants were dead. And I was like, no, it like went through its whole life. It reached maturity. It produced seeds, like its offspring, and then it dries, it dies, and then they harvested all the cilantro that they had grown, and then they had all these seeds that they saved for the next year. So they're learning like at a different scale. Like I think they're gonna get to the point, I think the Eco Garden Club, where they can like do rows of food and be able to go out there and like really harvest and give to the cafeteria and give. But it's kind of hard. Every 4 years, you get a new batch of students, you know, from different lenses and different perspectives. Yeah. So, that's kind
of. Yeah. And I mean, the cool part is a lot of the times they recruit themselves. Like, you know, they will tell you if I have a friend that's a sophomore and they're junior, mm-hmm. like, hey, you know, join the club. And, you know, you don't really need to invest a lot into recruiting because they do it themselves.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like, the ones that are there, I mean, to be out there after school
in the heat,
watering, you know, taking care of these plants is like, I was like, man, it's
hand watering. Before I joined, I shared with Chris from CalFresh. I was like, these kids are hand watering. Like, we need to get them an irrigation system. Poor thing. I mean, it's so hot out there to be like filling up a heavy bucket, carrying it. But the passion is there. Like, they're so enthusiastic. And some of them have never seen it. Like, when they got, I was there the first day they actually were picking tomatoes, and they like literally held it like a baby. They're like, oh my gosh, like they like were like, okay, let's cut it, like let's all taste, like they know what ketchup is, they know what potato, like tomatoes are, they go to the grocery store, but to physically see a plant grow from seed, to that.
Yeah, to the
it's like mind blowing. They've never grown eggplant. I grew eggplant with them this year. An Asian variety of eggplant, which is like the longer, it's like a longer, like not like the round one we see sometimes that people make like eggplant, what is it, fettuccine or like an Italian dish.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called.
Is it eggplant? Parmesan,
yes. So it's like a round, like the round one.
Yeah.
So these are really skinny and long. I like making spicy, what's it called? Spicy tofu with it. I put the eggplant, spicy eggplant tofu. Yeah. And we like saute it all at home. But they had never seen that before. So even introducing them to new foods that are different. There's tomatoes that are purple and different colors.
Yeah.
So I think it's such a great program. Chris has been doing it for such a long time, from the Chris Wong, even prior to working for CalFresh.
Yeah.
And anytime I get a chance to work with them, they're a great group of students to work with.
Yeah. Chris is amazing. I've known him for a long time. And
yeah.
Have you gone to his garden at his grandma's house?
I have.
Yeah. He has a...
Oh, no, not his grandma. His parents. I've only been to his parents'
garden. That's the one by
the high school, right?
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was his grandma's house. I don't know.
Oh, I thought it was his parents, but I can do some, like, check us, Chris, later that we got the information, right?
But yeah, Chris, and I've seen him, now he's working sometimes with Best of Four, and, you know, does the cooking class with them. And I think it's really important that we teach our community, especially the Hispanic community. There's a high rate of high blood pressure, diabetes. And I think, you know, learning how to grow a vegetable might entice more kids to eat the vegetables, because people don't eat vegetables a lot.
Yeah. And this is more from like a personal opinion, not like I'm taking off my master gardener hat slightly. As someone who grew up in Imperial County, surrounded by fields, some of it food, some of it alfalfa, just varies in what's growing in the field. We still have this huge disconnect from our food, whether it's accessing food or accessing healthy food, affordable healthy food, and kind of like, I feel like I see it with the Eclectic High School students, it's like they're re-meeting what food is. You know, sometimes you go to a grocery store or you already see the food cooked, like you don't really know what time and energy goes into it. I feel like they're just like relearning like what food is. And it's like similar to my story. So I very much relate to them, where I didn't have that connection. I went off to college and then was like I said, I had that very odd moment of, why do these people want to be outside? Why do they want to grow their food? Because like I said, I always thought about food growing in fields, and I was kind of taught the mentality of like, you know, you want to get a job where you're indoors and you're educated and you have that, you know, you don't want an outdoor, you know, sometimes that's pushed, I think, as an outlook in life, for parents who've had to work really tough jobs. But taking it a little bit further, I see kids just like, they're just so excited about like learning about and reconnecting with their food. And there's some really great people, I think, working in other nonprofits in Calexico that want to start a community garden here. So I have let them know that the UC Master Gardener program is like super excited to support them in their efforts, whether it's eventually having trained volunteers go out there and extend more education, or, you know, helping build that infrastructure. Like, what's the best setup for a garden? Where do you want to put it? Access to water, all those things. Like, I spend all day thinking about stuff like that.
Because
I've seen people set up gardens and I'm like, okay, where's the hose? It's like, I don't know, like super far away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this should have been over there.
Yeah. And you can also make gardens like part of your outdoor decor kind of thing. You know, like you can put like planters that are, you know, part of your wall, like a fencing and whatnot, you know.
I think
having it part of your backyard or whatever, you know, kind of it would make it even
the green space. Like they bring in that green space. I see that a lot, wanting to grow in containers at the senior living centers. I've been to the one in Brawley and Calexico, like the apartments, because they're so easy. I mean, you get a big enough pot. You don't have to really bend down. You're not using anything in the ground. It's safer, I think, for some people, even kids, I think, starting off with like pots and not starting off like super. I like start baby steps, like do some herbs in a pot keep that alive, get excited about it. If it can be a little addicting. I've met people that started from like pots to like having like a quarter of acre now of like trying new seeds and new, like, super ambitious. So if you get into it, like, it just kind of grows the interest.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we're at almost 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Is there anything that we haven't, cause we've been talking about a lot of gardening and stuff, but, dive more into the program before we.
Yes. So there was certain things I did want to plug. So, for the city of Calexico, I'll be doing an informational presentation on October the 12th at the Calexico Library. So the Kika Marina Library, from 5:30 to 6:30. And that's like a perfect meeting for me to get to meet you. I'll go through the steps on how to apply, what to expect if you become trained as a volunteer. I also want to hear from who's interested. Maybe early on, they're going to tell me like, I want to do something with indoor plants. Maybe when I build out the training, I'll add some, like, sprinkle that in. Because if that's an interest of a volunteer. So that's something that's already on the books. Not for Calexico, but I'll be in the Imperial Library on September the 7th and September the 21st from 10 to noon. And that's kind of like a tabling event at the Imperial Library where I'll just like set up my booth and come and ask me your gardening questions. If I don't know the answer, I will find the answer. I always tell people that. And I will also be there to help you with the application if you're filling it out, if you have any questions, any concerns. Really, my goal as a coordinator is just to be out as much as I can in the community, and libraries are just a great place to connect with the community. I'll also be doing an informational presentation at the end of September. We don't have a date yet at the Imperial Library. I'll be doing something in El Centro, something out by Heber. So I'm trying to, you know, hit almost every cran, like every part, because Imperial County is so wide.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely do one in Brawley, one in Imperial, one in El Centro, one in Calexico. Probably won't go Sealy. We'll do something close to Hopeville. And I'm thinking I might go all the way out to San Pasquale or in that area, because that is Imperial County. And if there's any residents out there that are really interested, I would love to get them involved in the Master Gardener program, because that just means another area. So if we have, the way I see it is, if
you're,
I have,
you're planting 50, a seed.
Yeah, kinda. I'm planting a seed. That's a perfect way to think about it. So if I get like 50 like little like people that are interested, and I can plant them all around Imperial County. I want some from Brawley, some from Imperial, some from, I don't want to just stay in one area.
Yeah.
That's more capacity building for us. So if there's someone out in San Pasquale that's like, yeah, I want to do a community garden, I want to do this, go through the training, feel confident through the knowledge that we'll share with them. And then, you know, then our program will support them and what projects they want to do. So those are the things I have on the books. I will also be at the Imperial Market Days in October. I believe it's Saturday, October the 15th. So all of these places, these will be on social media, also share on our website. The goal is just to get the word out there as much as I can. That's why I kind of came today and wanted to talk to you. But I think for the most part, hopefully I answered as much as I could about the Master Gardener program. The cool thing is it's new. So I feel like right now is like the dreaming phase, like create that wish list. If my 50 volunteers, like, I'm here to listen, I'm here to support, I'm here to grow the program, because I would love it to get funded again in a year. But that really is going to come from the community. If this is something the county wants to fund again, hopefully, and then we can go for 5 years and then five more years and then be like the other counties like Riverside that says, oh, yeah, let's look back. It's been, you know, since the 80s or 40 plus years that we've been here. That'd be really cool.
And I'll share like on the description of today's episode, I'll put links to your Instagram and the website. That way, if people, you know, can't find or need information, they can go there and find your Instagram and all that.
I don't know if it'd be worth actually just saying my email. I can say my email.
Yeah.
So my email address is KM. M like mouse, and I feel like I'm on the phone, like doing a voicemail. Salgado, Salgado at ucanr.edu. And maybe we can add that also to like the end of the podcast footnotes. I'm not going to say my phone number, but if you look at my email and my phone number for my office is there, you can give me a call too. I enjoy talking to community members that are passionate about gardening. I just want to see this program just grow and, you know, be awesome.
It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of things that, especially people that want a garden but don't know how, I think it's going to be really helpful. And like I said, like, you're going to be planting these seeds that there are going to be people out in the community that are going to be as passionate about gardening that can help them in their areas.
Yeah.
So that, you know, hopefully more, we see more and more home gardens in the future because of the Master Gardening Program. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I feel super lucky to have this job. So it's super fun that I can say my job is gardening. And talking about gardening, like I said, I could do a whole podcast just on composting. I feel really fortunate to be in this role.
Maybe that could be something that you guys can do
as a group. Yeah.
And do, I don't know if you would qualify it as volunteer hours.
It does, actually. So other Master Gardener program, I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because I didn't go into that, but other Master Gardener programs actually have a podcast. They produce a podcast every month and they talk about the questions that they get from people. So eventually the Master Gardener program will have a hotline. So if you're in the middle of doing something, like you were growing your peppers and you're like, ah, what's going on? You know, you could call that number. Someone would pick it up and be like, oh, hey, how could I help you? And those would be my volunteers that have the knowledge, know where to get the information, and they could help you right away. Uh-huh. And so other counties have made podcasts where they take all those questions that they've gotten in the season or that month. And they're like, okay, these are the questions we got. We got a question about how to grow, you know, a chile, and like, how do we do that? And they talk about it and they give information. So there is podcasts like that. So if there is a passionate person that maybe they want to learn about gardening, but they're not like super jazzed about teaching about gardening, maybe they want to do a podcast or tech savvy. Maybe you want to be, throw that out there. Just kidding. There is a lot of opportunity. Volunteer work can look so, it doesn't have to be physically in a garden. Yeah. It can be doing a podcast, giving a presentation, running the hotline. We're open to different things.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, it's the dream part, like make your wish list. And hopefully, you know, it comes true and it keeps going, like in, like you said, those other counties that have been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. That's the goal.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, thank you for coming and sharing about Master Gardener. Like I said, it sounds really, really fun, really interesting. It's going to be for 50 people this time around.
Yes.
So if you are interested, make sure you visit the website, visit the Instagram, make sure to know when the applications are open. Mm-hmm. Sign up, because it's going to be a really intense screening, you know.
We do do a slight interview. I don't want to intimidate anyone, but yeah, there is a little bit of an interview. There is an application. But I actually have right now, if you do go to our website, a future Master Gardener list. So if you're a person that just wants to know exactly when the application opens, I think right now I have like 30 people who have signed up that when that application gets posted on our website, they're going to get an email.
Oh, okay.
So they can jump on it right away. So I would sign up on that, like that little list right now if you can.
Yeah, because it's already 30, like you said. So
yeah, so that kind of goes to show, like, I think there is like a huge interest, and that was just with one post.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, cool. thank you again for coming by. I want to thank Calexico Brewing Company once again for allowing me to record today's episode here. And I want to thank you guys for listening or watching, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.